This podcast is brought to you by ARC Facilities, providing instant mobile access to facility information for on-the-go teams. To learn more about our smart building technology, visit arcfacilities.com. And now, welcome to the Facility Voices Podcast with your host, David Trask.
Hi, I'm David Trask from ARC Facilities, and this is Facility Voices, the podcast that brings you real-world FM experiences from the front lines in the field. My guest today is Michael Wood. He's Senior Director, Facility Support Services at Parkland Health. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, David, for having me.
Oh, I appreciate it. So tell me a little bit about you and your role at Parkland.
A little bit about me briefly. I've been in this business for 30 years. I didn't plan on, I'm 29 years longer than I projected to be, but that's okay. I love what I'm doing. I'm very passionate about my role in healthcare and facilities management. So I'm fortunate to be in an area I'm passionate about. So what I do here at Parkland Health, we are Dallas County's safety net hospital. We are the busiest hospital in the United States per all the reviews. I don't know if that's a blessing or a cursing, but I'm the senior director of facilities. So I have direct responsibility for, engineering. That's either the main campus and all of our offsite portfolio. We're a little over 7 million square feet, gross square feet we maintain. I have the life safety, fire marshal's office, clinical engineering, which is the, all the biomedical engineering, the medical equipment, sustainability, which is anything from energy conservation to environmental efforts to a garden that we do that we maintain for our patients. There's a safety, which is environmental care, safety compliance, all of the regulatory branches that we do. So keeps me busy. I guess I enjoy doing it because I don't know any better.
Herding cats is what I heard too.
Yeah, we herd cats. We're good cat herders. So
that's awesome. Well, give us a little bit more on Parkland, your footprint. I know you said you're roughly 7 million square feet, but talk about your sites.
So fortunately, I tell people part of my career goal was, I have to maybe open up a brand new hospital, a brand new campus. And we were able to do that quite a few years ago. And so that's a blessing and a cursing. You got this big, shiny new building, but then comes with it all these other sort of problems that you maybe have never run into by having a brand new campus. So we have a brand new camp, well, fairly new campus, about 8 years old. It's the acute care hospital, 2.1 million square foot. The rest of the square footage on campus, which is roughly 3.5 million, is either a medical office building. We have an 80,000 square foot central utility plant, which is a really nice, modern, new plant. And the rest of the square footage is everything from, maybe some warehouse space to offsite clinics. We do a lot of, we have some business occupancies type establishments. So we pretty much run the full site. We have jail health. We manage jail health for local, for Dallas Jail. So we have some of that as well. So we kind of have a very diverse portfolio.
It's massive from what you said, as busy yes. as you guys are. My goodness sakes. I mean, you've got to be the herding cats is probably the understatement of the century.
We stay pretty full. I tell people if you do the very simple math, 650 to 700 people a day through your ER, that's a day, times 365. That's quite a few people we have. And then our census, we remain fairly full. I would, fair to say we're 95 to 100% full occupancy, roughly 850 bed licensed beds. That's just where we sit. That's where we reside. There, we provide a greatly needed service to the community. We very are much in tune with the community. We try to add services in areas, populated areas that need additional services. So it's really nice to see the mission continue to focus on those that need the most health care and where we can be the most impactful.
I love that. I mean, you're definitely serving the community and helping the community. I love that. And one of the things that we had talked about offline was a lot of organizations, are in a position where they're struggling and they struggle with how to get things done. I had a podcast I just recorded the other day with a gentleman, and he was talking about financing and their finances and labor shortages and a whole plethora of different things. But he said one of the biggest struggles that a lot of folks have is selling their ideas to leadership. And that's what I really wanted to talk to you about today, because offline, we had a great conversation about that. And A lot of folks struggle with that, and they've either moved into this role, moved up into this role or something like that, or they've left another organization, came into another organization, and learning how to navigate that within an organization can oftentimes be a struggle for folks. And how have you found that are some successful ways to navigate that within your organization over the years?
Right. It's a dance. When you're sitting there talking about different dilemmas that, you know, maybe other facilities folks have had, it's definitely a dance. And there has to be an authentic approach to this. So I think the biggest thing for me is when I get into a situation, whether it's your normal annual budget that you're trying to reconcile and trying to plug all the numbers in and try to be aware of everything that's going on within the enterprise and all the different pulls and needs and draws. And but also when it comes to, you know, if you need new equipment or new service or whatever the case may be, I find it very helpful. And I found very good success in, first of all, know your business. Know your business. You've got to understand the impacts of, let's just take an air handler, right? So we have an air handler that supplies air to a critical area or an area. So understanding the impacts, if that particular unit goes down, the business continuity, losing the business, what would be the, all the negative impacts versus not replacing it and taking that risk or scheduled downtimes versus having an emergency downtime. I find that bringing that sort of rubber meets the road information up to the proper individuals within your organization and saying, hey, look, this is all of us, not just facilities, but this is all of us that need to make these decisions. And here's the sort of risk assessment that was done. Here's the gap analysis. And you can use all the clicky words that we use in healthcare. There's a way to present that information, and you've got to find what works right for your leadership too, right? So I've been in certain situations where a COO just tell me what it is, give me the basics, and we'll have that discussion. And I've had others that go back and forth and want to have a sort of more of an in-depth analysis done so they can understand and maybe they can educate. The other things that I've done too is we start talking FM language in sort of an administrative C-suite sort of role. They get lost real quick. And so what I try to do is break it down. Hey, it's just like, okay, so it's just like your furnace in your house. Like you have this return air that comes in, it does this. I try to really break it down. And, you know, I was like, just like your home, did you have to have emergency repairs done on your air conditioner this year? Did you wake up and it was 90 degrees in your house? And so I try to help bridge that sort of knowledge gap, because I'm in the same way when they start talking about maybe a medical procedure or something like that. Hey, stop, break it down, help me understand. So I do a lot of that. I also am trying to be a good steward of our facility. And so I try to make sure that I only ask for the stuff that I really need or anticipate needing. There's not a lot of fluff in there. Building that level of transparency is important for me. And just trying to understand, I pay attention to the financials when they come out. When our financials come out on a monthly basis, we do a lot of reconciliation, trying to make sure I understand what we're seeing, kind of, and if we have sort of a one-off that we need to do, I make sure I document that. I make sure that we keep good record keeping so we can talk the story, because I cannot tell you how many times I've been in different institutions or different meetings and facilities when, you know, hey, you had a $80,000 variance in this particular line item. They're just looking at you for an answer, and somebody's going, let me get back to you. I need to research that. These are the things from a business aspect that are been asked of me to be mindful of. I should know what I'm talking about. So I think it's really important to understand that. That brings credibility. That brings credibility. Also being sort of like, hey, I screwed up. I probably should have known this, or I should have been maybe more ahead of this, or respectfully falling on the sword. This just brings that transparency. We're all sort of in this together. There's a lot of grace and mercy. We try to practice that. And so we feel like we get that back when we need to tap into that resource. So those are some of the things that I've sort of done over the years. And I think the biggest one is just really know your systems, do the homework, you know, come in on a Saturday, come in on a Sunday, walk the system, understand it, take your prints, read them, understand what this system does. And so you can speak to it or prep yourself for those discussions. And if you don't know the answer to a question, don't sit there and try to wing it and make it up. You mean respectfully say, look, I've had some individuals we've been asking for this and we feel like we've got this whole business case put together and we've got all the information. All of a sudden, we'll ask a question. I'm like, ooh, that's a good question. Let me get right back to you. I need to do a little bit more due diligence. So I think all that just really helps that sort of dance per se.
I can definitely see that. And I love the way you approached it with breaking it down so that they could understand. Because, you know, I think a lot of folks just, you know, executive leadership doesn't understand facilities. I mean, for the most part, mm-hmm. you know, they don't know the nuts and bolts. They know the high level, but they don't know the nuts and bolts of systems. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, you don't necessarily know their systems or their terminology or language all the way either. But what are some of those lessons learned? You know, what are some of those things that you've evolved over time in those discussions with your leadership?
Well, I think it's kind of going back to what I said is I feel like there's times I've been involved in conversations, and a great example is sit in what we call root cause analysis, an RCA session. Sit in one of those that really maybe you're just sitting there on the sidelines and listening and just see how fast you get lost in that conversation, because you don't know how this particular procedure is working and or this clinical, whatever it is it's being spoke to. And we can get lost real quick. But just think about the other way around. If I start talking, you know, FM talk where I'm talking about AHUs and I'm talking about the BMS system or the BAS system or the Siemens or the Johnson control or whatever, you know, you're throwing out all this stuff and you know, and you're starting to talk about temperature and humidity ranges and you're talking about air pressurization just in this air handler world, people get lost real quick. So a couple of things that I have done to kind of continue to help navigate that is I tell people we have a regulatory compliance piece of this puzzle that we need to maintain. So regulatory compliance is the baseline. I should not be going into my administration team or my leadership team saying, I got to be regulatory compliance. I got to be doing that. That's the expectation, right? So I'm going in saying, hey, we need to maintain, right, this baseline. In order for us to maintain this, these are the things that we need to do because we have a aging infrastructure or whatever the case may be. This is how humidity control works, or this is how we do air pressurization, or these are the devices that we need. And it's very complex. And if, you know, and I try to explain how they're tied in together and how they sort of work and they keep the system going. So I think part of the more time that you're able to get in front of the right members and be able to have that discussion, I think that's critical. I've heard a lot of people say, hey, look, they don't want to have the discussion. They don't want to have this. Well, then it's our job to try to figure out how you want to do it. Another way you could do it, you got to be real careful if this is the approach you want to take. Do a risk assessment. Put it in a heat chart map that we all use. It's sort of like the Joint Commission piece that says, hey, these are your high-level risks. These are your medium. These are your lows. These are the impacts. Run them through a different committee. There's very, you know, healthcare has some really strong committees you could run through. I just would warn people before they do that. They need to make sure that everyone is aware that this is what's going to happen, because if you run it through certain committees, it's documented. There's exposure there. You want to make sure that everyone's aligned because, you know, it's important. But one of the things that I have done is if I've gone into an aging infrastructure, I'll sit there and I'll go through and I'll do a sort of a risk assessment analysis on all the medevac pumps, oxygen systems, you know, generation systems, you know, air handler systems, all these critical systems that are must-haves. You must have them. You don't have a choice. And you start working through ages and some of the things that you're seeing when it comes to lack of maintenance, or maybe they no longer support this anymore. Or there's all these different sort of pieces of the puzzle that you can put in together to provide you a score. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of programs that already do this, but I feel like doing it real time, you can speak to it. You can actually walk somebody to that system, like, hey, show me this system. All right, well, you better know how to get there, right? So those are important. But I find doing that level of due diligence and having that sort of confidence, not arrogance, you want to make sure you have that confidence going into those discussions. They yield a lot of good fruit. I can't tell you realistically if we've had a sort of urgent need that we've had to petition for that we've ever really been turned down, because we don't go to the trough all the time for this. We try to say, these are the things that we need. And if we have we try to make ourselves a seat at the table. It's important to have that seat at the table. And when we're asked about it, we say, okay, here's the ramifications if we don't do this.
I loved your approach on that, because I think it's truly building that open honest relationship with leadership. So building that transparent relationship with them. And how do you recommend, especially with new folks who have never really had to have that kind of a relationship or those deep discussions, maybe they've moved up within an organization to build that relationship with executives?
First and foremost, ask, how do you want me to present information? You know, I mean, those are the things that, do you want me to give you a monthly status report update? Do you want me to email you? Do you want me to set meetings up on your calendar? I mean, you need to ask, you have to understand, I think it's important to say, look, we have an important role in the operations of the hospital. One of our systems goes down, we are down. So there has to be this sort of, we need to have an opportunity to sit down. So I think it's ask what's the best way to communicate. Everyone has a different style. You know, I'm just as guilty. I've sent emails at 2 or 3 in the morning just because I need to get it off my plate, off my mind. Figure out what's
You were able to just get to it then.
Yeah. So, you know, it comes down to the typical day in facilities life, right? You know, I'm going to deviate just a bit here. So I've got phone goes off, elevators are going down, nursing administration calls me, you know, hey, something's happened here, the pneumatic tube system, which is, you know, like 12 miles worth of pneumatic tube. There's nothing going through there. So all of a sudden all these alarms start popping off and I'm getting a bunch of notifications on my phone. I'm trying to call my team saying, hey, obviously we had a power glitch of some sort. Are we out of it? Are we in it? What's the status? And my team's out trying to get systems either turned back on or try to understand what's happening. And this goes on for about 45 minutes to an hour. And I'm trying to figure out whether I should, because I'm offsite, I'm at my house. And so should I come in? Should I not come in? Not sure what value I'd be if I came in. So anyways, I finally get a hold of somebody and he's able to say, look, okay, we're recovering. Everything's back to normal. It looks like we took a power glitch from the supplier. Systems are starting to come back online. I got to go reset some air handlers. I got some guys working over here. I said, okay, so you have everything you need to be successful. You're good to go. And he says, yes, I'm good to go. I said, okay. And I said, so I called nursing administration back. I informed them what's going on. You know, they're sort of the people that we need to keep this information communication going. I sent a few text messages to my leadership saying, this is what happened. This is the status. We're in green light. We're good to go. And I set my phone down, look up, and it's 3:55 in the morning, and my day starts at 4. That's very typical for, you know, a facilities manager. So the best thing for me to, you know, is just understand the way for those coming up in the ranks. Sometimes it's really good to be a good listener. I mean, a lot of times my fingers are pointing right back at me. I get a little excited in what I'm trying to do and try to my point getting across. It's navigating what works best, what type of communication do we do, one-on-ones, be ready for them. Getting ready is not ready. Be ready for those types of meetings and make sure you have the background in the everything you need to have that successful conversation.
I think that by doing that, you're setting yourself up for success too. What are some of the traps that can torpedo selling your ideas or building your business case? What are some of the things that you got to watch out for that you found?
I think part of the things that I have found either personally experienced or seen in other things are the numbers don't work. Your business case isn't solid. There's too many gaps, too many holes in it. You haven't had it peer reviewed or you haven't had any sort of cross sort of checks and balances done. You haven't aligned network with right individuals. Like, for instance, great example here. We wanted to do some things that impacted some of our operations. And part of it is we needed to work with our infection prevention partners, right? So we have a great, strong infection prevention team here. We have a solid partnership. Well, in this particular case, we hadn't done as good as a job as we should have. So we went to present this initiative, right? And part of the feedback was we need infection prevention to sign off on this. And have you all had the conversation with them? And we kind of looked at each other like, oops, no, not really. We probably missed that opportunity. It's just learning those people around you. How do you build those networks around you so you don't have those failures and those little gaps in your presentations or whatever the case may be? Make sure you have the right sign off. Again, business case, not knowing your equipment is going to be huge. I know you can't anticipate all the answers, but make sure you try to get prep as best you can. I think part of this is, and I mentioned it earlier, in confidence and arrogance get mixed up a lot. I think there's a lot of folks that I've seen in this business, and that sort of feel like, hey, I know more, so I'm a very valuable asset to the organization. And so the more I hold, the more power I yield, more information I hold, the more power I yield. And I feel like that's a trap. You know, that's a trap. That's not, it's not fair for someone to have, hold back information from anybody. I have a very strong partnership with UT, Southwestern Children's Hospital, our neighbors, other hospitals. I had a gentleman call me from El Paso yesterday. I will share and give you whatever information you need, and vice versa. I mean, we're all in this together. There's enough in this world to help. My program is if you're doing something that I can learn from and vice versa, or we can be a resource for you, let's go. You know, I mean, we've even shared fuel, people contact information during winter weather. We're having difficulties doing this. We've shared, you know, different teams, offered to send a team down to another hospital that had a major plumbing issue and they couldn't get it help. We offered to send our plumber. This is, all the walls are down. And I think that's part of the authenticity you sort of represent, in that you're, you know, the outward glowing that you should have as being a facilities person. So I, again, some of the pitfalls is not walking in that level of insecurity, where if you feel like you got to, I know more, I'm more valuable. Well, people see through that. And that's not a good selling point. That's going to be stumbling block as soon as you walk in the door.
You're spot on. I think we all learn from each other too. Like you said, this isn't a competitive thing. We're all in this to help each other. And we all learn from each other. And I think that when we admit that we don't know what we don't know is a good thing.
Should be.
Yeah.
It should be. I mean, there's been many times I've called, you know, my partners at other facilities and helped me out here, struggling with this or struggling with that. And if anything, it just tightens up your bond between you and the other folks. And I'm not, you know, just within the last hour, I had a conversation talking about an opportunity coming up. And I was like, you know, give so-and-so a call over this hospital. I think they're doing the same thing, or they're already working on it. That's the way it should be.
That's great.
You know? And I feel like that's part of some of the issues that I've run into in the past is pitfalls, is people are afraid to ask, or, you know, they'll do all this Google research on a particular code, when I know for a fact that you can call folks in the regulatory world and they'll give you that information. There might be certain processes you have to follow internally, but just go right to the source instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and figuring this out.
It leads me to my next question here too. It's, you're wanting or needing something within your facility, and you've got to build that business case, and you're also going to be in that room where you've got to pitch this. What are some of the tips you would provide folks that for getting that kind of buy-in when you're sitting in that room and you've got to sell this upstream?
Stick to the facts. Facts are stubborn things. There's been times where I've seen, hopefully I didn't do this, but there's been times where people have pitched things and it gets so far outside the boundaries of crazy, they forget what they pitched. Stick to the facts. Facts are stubborn things. If you need certain equipment or certain things, make sure you have the data behind it. Have some solid talking bullet points. Be willing to listen. Be open to feedback. Be open to follow up. And there's been more than one time where I felt like something didn't go really well. I was like, you know, I don't know if we're going to. And I do a few follow up yays and nays or whatever. I think that's important. Things get approved, you know. Be okay. Like, for example, we had a particular project we thought was fairly important. It would have been a big win for the organization long term. It was a little bit of an expense up front. I can remember, you know, getting a phone call and saying, look, you know, this is expensive. Is this a must have? We sold it pretty hard. We sold it really hard. And this is a must have. And if it's a must have, we'll do it. But understand, it's a little bit of a blip here for us financially. And I said, you know, it's not a must have. It's a nice to have. Because what I did was, is that if this doesn't get approved, if this process doesn't get approved of this plan, I had a plan B. This is how we're going to manage it. So that's also important too, is if you really want something, if you get a no or a pushback or anything, if there is a plan B, be willing to present it and share it. And that's exactly what I did, because that was what I was asked by when my C-suite member called me. And they said, you know, look, we want to approve this. I want to approve this. What's our risk or liability if I don't? I felt he was very vulnerable because he didn't really know a lot what he was talking about, right? And, which is fair. It's my role for the organization to know that. I said, look, I said, there's a plan B here. This is what we can do. And we will be okay. We will be okay. If we can't fund it here, No, we'll come back for it. We will continue to ask for it because we think it's good for the facilities. But if it's not the right time right now, have that plan B. Or on the other scale, there's not a plan B. I have to have this, folks. This is what's going to happen. The decision is a group decision, even knowing if your recommendations, we move forward. We do a good job band-aiding things in our world. We do almost too good of a job. And like, oh man, can you get another year out of this? Or can you get another 18 months? You know, financially we're here and yeah, I'll take care of that. And next thing you know, they send you an email and they're gone, you know, and now you got to resell this thing. So,
right. How do you address, you know, you touched on this. How do you address with that when you're selling it upstream, the immediate or emergency needs versus a long-term needs? You just talked about having the plan B in some of these instances, but sometimes those are the ones that, listen, if we don't, it means X. So how do you address that?
Yeah, I mean, straight out, right from the very beginning, this is a must have. We had an emergency generator that went down. We had to do a rental generator. As we started digging into this with our outside external resources, come to find out, you know, they didn't no longer made parts for this. And if they did, it was an 18-month lead time. So we bundled up all this information fairly quickly. We made sure all our I's were dotted and our T's were crossed. We made sure we had everything we need. We got a hold of our generator company. We said, okay, if we ordered one, how long is it going to take? So we had all this information. And we went in there and sat down and said, here's where we're at. It's drop dead emergency. Got to have it. Don't have an option. Got a rental, which is fine. The rental's fine. We're okay. We don't want to stay in a rental state, but we're fine. But this is what we have to have. Here's the regulatory requirements. Not that people need that, but you didn't want to have it in your back pocket in case you're asked. And then basically laid out sort of the what this need is and what it looks like and the costs. And we didn't waver. Some of these decisions are already made for you. You know, I think what it really, really gets into the gray areas is when you're getting into trying to be proactive in replacing equipment, knowing it's reached its end of life. And you're trying to sell, hey, I need a new air handler for, you know, third floor or whatever, but you've never really had problems with it, but you're just trying to, you're trying to stay ahead of the curve. And I think those are the ones that are sort of, there's not a really, really strong way of doing it unless you have a plan that you can say this is on a scheduled replacement program. We do that really well in the clinical engineering world because, you know, we can do end of life, end of support. You know, one of the things that we find is if someone tells you, for example, a fire alarm is no longer supported or parts are no longer available, you better make sure you get that documentation. You can attach that right to your capital request. Bang. That should be an easy sell. The decisions are made for you. I've seen it. Parts are being bought on eBay just to kind of keep things up and running. Bring all that information in. The more that type of information you can have, sometimes it's the way kicker to put it over. But on the other hand, David, you build that trust and that rapport with your administration suite, there won't be a lot of this back and forth.
I definitely could see that. I mean, my goodness, it's building that relationship. But I think also it, from everything that I've heard you say to, so far, it's this shouldn't be a big surprise to leadership because you've been communicating with them all along the way. And I love that approach because then it's not necessarily the shock factor. Don't get me wrong. You're still going to have those.
You're going to have them, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen. But the big things, and hopefully it's not the big things that are the surprises, and sometimes it is. But for the most part, I love the plan. You know, you're building your plan, but your plan evolves.
It does. And you got to have a strategic approach because you go into some aging facilities like, you know, when I was at Old Parkland that was built in the 50s and 60s and 70s and had some last upgrades in the 80s. And so we have a lot of aging infrastructure. I understand. Where do you start? Everything's old, right? I get it. Heck, I'm old. Where do you start? I don't know. We start by taking your blood pressure. Let's just start with a chilled water system. I don't know. But there's, you know, in each thing's a priority. And sometimes the priorities will shift because things break or whatever. But that's just sort of the, I mean, you can, there's vendors and resources out there that can help you come in and do those sort of things. I'm not against those. Those are fine. But sometimes there's a, you know, boots on the ground, immediate need. You got to get this figured out. You got to do this assessment and get it going. And then you got to stay up with all the regulatory noise too. So there, it's not, and then, and again, a lot of us that sit in these types of driver's seat, we're wearing more than just one hat. So there's five or six, seven, eight hats you're wearing. All of a sudden, bang, you're managing construction over here. So time management, work-life balance, those are all important. I don't know why anyone would want to get into this trade, let me just say that. But
oh, gee.
I say that just because of the craziness, but it's a, you know, there's a lot of us that work really hard at this, that put our head down every night, and we've done the right thing.
I love that. No, I love that. And are there any resources that you recommend that when people are looking at selling upstream or talking to other folks that they've got to get buy-in from? Are there any resources you'd recommend?
Well, first of all, I think you should look internally, right? There's a lot of the healthcare systems that do offer mentorship programs, leadership programs. One of the things that I did that I try to get involved in different committees that maybe aren't really associated with facilities, just to understand the people and the dynamics and, you know, the worlds and some of the other struggles that people see, to help understand. I think those are important, to try to look at your internal resources first and foremost. And you start looking out, you have your professional affiliations, ASHI, and your local chapters. And I think there's a lot of good resources there. There's other groups that actually come in and do some mentoring and training. But a self-investment is absolutely critical. There's all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, when I started, I had to pick up a phone call and call this guy in NFPA to find out what this code means. Nowadays, you can Google everything. All the resources are there. Again, to me, it's learning the style of whomever it is that you're answering to that you need, that helps make you these decisions, and learning what works best for them.
I love that. And I appreciate you sharing your insights, Michael. I look forward to catching everybody on the next episode of Facility Voices. And again, Michael, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into Facility Voices, a podcast that explores the big issues and challenges facing the facility management industry today. We welcome your feedback, ideas, and suggestions for topics and guests. Send an email to communications@arcfacilities.com or reach out to our host, David Trask, on LinkedIn. Facility Voices is brought to you by ARC Facilities.